Here you are, folks. You have tuned in to the 173rd consecutive episode of This Week in Mormons. That's right. We're here to bring you Mormon news and just to have a great time and the fun and the things.
Al, Jeff, we're here where dreams take wings.
Oh, Al, you decided to finally chime in. I was worried I lost you.
No, I was just waiting for you to give me an opening, Jeff.
You always...
You're like the worst wingman ever.
I'm not the wingman. I'm the pilot.
Am I the gunner? What am I?
If you ever want... You should start the show. I'm going to have you start the show every week.
I'll never do it, Jeff. This show would never get started if it weren't for you. And that's the truth.
We will say 3, 2, 1, and then you will start the program next week.
No.
Yeah.
No.
This is happening.
No.
I've done it every week for a very long time.
It's tradition, Jeff.
But we broke with tradition.
If you try and stop this tradition, I will kill you.
Really?
I will cut you.
Can you wait until I get a life insurance policy so I have something to leave my wife?
Yeah.
Because I really don't have any other good assets to give her. So
This has been my plan all along. I'm going to marry... Under the premise that I'll get you money somehow, baby.
Well, that was our agreement, so.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like what's happened here.
I have to make it happen somehow. Anyway, it's nice to have you here. I believe you're back in Utah, aren't you?
Here I am. I'm looking out my window at the rain, and it's lovely.
Yeah? It's raining
well,
here.
They don't call it rain here. They call it moisture, but yes. Here I am.
The wife is saying something to me. What? There's no rain anymore. The birds are chirping, she says.
That's on her television.
There was a thunder.
Tell her to get out of the living room.
Get out of the living room. I don't know. Al, honey, Al said you have to leave.
I don't feel like you can just say verbatim everything I tell you to say. I feel like that would get your marriage into trouble, Jeff.
Well, yeah, but if I say it, it gets me in trouble. If I pawn it off
know,
on you.
I would abuse that power. I feel like it'd be better to throw me under the bus.
And now she thinks people are going to think that I'm mean to my wife.
I would submit that might be true.
It is
Jeff.
Not true.
Maybe
anyone
an
who knows
person.
Me knows that I am pathetically in love with her.
Well, you certainly
I become
pathetic.
A pile of mushy goop.
All right, that's enough. Let's not... No,
lovely
stop it.
Goop.
I know where this is going, and it's not pretty. Give me something else to talk about, Jeff.
Well,
give it to me.
So you had a road trip. I hope that was fun.
Dude, road trip was great. I went south to Arkansas.
Woo! Did you go to Texarkana?
I don't even know what that means.
Never mind. You didn't go there.
I went mountain biking, rode some great trails. Good job down there, Arkansas people.
Oh, you went mountain biking. So you were in the Ozarks of Arkansas then.
Yeah, it was tremendous mountain biking there. Ate at a sushi place that was the most amazing sushi place imaginable.
No.
Get this. So you go in and sit down, and they immediately bring a plate and light it on fire. There's the fish in the tin or something, and it's going. And they are, like, we were in and out of there with a full, like, 5 sushi roll meal in probably 10 minutes. I mean, they were there, they were chopping, and what can we get you? And there was, like, 8 people servicing our table all at once. I think there were 2 of them that were doing cartwheels synchronously, while another one would, like, they brought our roll out, then lit it on fire again, and did some other stuff, and, like, throwing chili powder in the air, and stuff is happening.
Yeah.
And then it was over. Then we were out.
Really? Cartwheels, huh?
It was incredible. Like, I felt like I was in a circus, right? Like, like 3 rings happening all the time, Barnum and Bailey genius happening all around me, and I'm looking everywhere. I kept checking my wallet, seeing if they were trying to steal from me. Like, that's how crazy this place was.
You are
was.
Painting a very racist picture.
Why?
You're
is
hanging
the circus
out with
racist,
you assume
Jeff?
That because you're hanging out with Asians that they are nimble and like unto the circus, as if you're watching some sort of acrobatic display.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm getting at. And it was crazy. Dude. I mean, very, very, very fun. And so that was my Arkansas. Went up to Oklahoma City.
Where in Arkansas did this happen?
Bentonville.
Where the heck is Bentonville, Arkansas?
The Walmart capital of the world. Jeff, how do you not know where Walmart is from?
Oh, well, because I'm a Target shopper.
Oh, my gosh.
That's really what
Where's
it comes
Target
down to.
Where's Target from?
Target's based in Minneapolis, actually. Along with Best Buy.
So we leave there, go to Oklahoma City, and saw the National Memorial there.
Lovely.
Which was very well done. Quite a moving experience. And then did the Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. Traveling now in our age is so incredible. Like, I get in my car. I don't think about where I'm going. I don't think about how to get out of town. There was a time when people would be like, all right, how do I get back on the highway? Okay, left, right, left, left, right, left. Okay, let me try that. Or you would print out directions on paper.
The old MapQuest days.
Oh, that was awful. And like, you make one wrong turn, there's a detour or something, and you're just hosed. Your whole life is ruined.
Yeah, I imagine.
Well, like, anymore, I'm like, Diners, Drive-Ins, give me the best places to eat, which some might debate. But like, they were all good places and the best food to get at these places.
How many Triple D locations did you hit up on this trip?
Five.
You went to five Triple D places?
Jeff, it was incredible.
And they were actually good.
Yeah, none of them.
You remember Omaha last year?
Omaha was bad, but even these places. I mean, they're a little tacky. Like, we went to one that was Ingrid's Kitchen in Oklahoma City, which was very tasty, but like, it was just a cafeteria. It wasn't like interesting or anything. They had incredible rolls there, just flaky, delicious, wonderful rolls. But it was fun. It was a fun experience the whole time. But what was crazy to me is I was like, I can go anywhere. And get pretty darn close to like the experience that locals have, just using my cell phone and cruising. I was loving traveling this time. So
and then
we
you
did
went
that,
up, you went
left
up,
Oklahoma, went to Boulder.
Yeah,
saw the Boulder run on Memorial Day, which was the largest 10K in America.
And to get up there, did you just go back straight up north and get back on the 80 or 70 and go back to?
No, we went over through New Mexico and up.
Really?
Jeff, I was road tripping.
I know, but I'm trying. So where'd you go? Did you take like the 40 and then cut across around to like Las?
Oh, that's right.
Where did you go? Did you go all the way up to Las Vegas, New Mexico, or did you cut across and barely go through New Mexico until you crossed?
We barely went through New Mexico.
So my guess is you were on US 87.
Hold on.
Yeah, that's probably what it was.
I'm looking.
It doesn't matter. But basically, you cut up through a little corner of New Mexico.
Yeah, it's a corner of New Mexico.
Did you go through Amarillo?
We did.
That's a terrible place.
We ate it. Yeah, it's awful, but you know, it's still tasty.
Let's say, you know.
Good Mexican there, you know?
Yeah.
And then we were in Boulder. Love Boulder.
I know
Caught
you
up
love
a bunch
Boulder.
Of friends.
For a long time.
And then
listeners.
Drove home on the drive home from Boulder to Salt Lake, going through like the Vernal Way, right? We're going through like Steamboat Springs and all that in Colorado. So I was going a little fast through one section, down a hill. You climb the big mountain, then you top, and you're on your way down. And it goes from like 65, which is fine to do like 85-ish in, to the part where it's 50 and totally got snagged by a cop.
Was this in Colorado?
It sure was. Okay. And I just bought my car like a month ago. And so in Missouri, you don't have to, like, there's no registration or full registration thing that happens. You just swap the plates and you have 30 days
to make
it right.
Wait, you got a new car?
I did.
You don't even tell me these things.
Jeff, we never talk.
What happened to the Camry?
I still have a Camry. I just have a Camry with fewer miles.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
So I'm all in. I love that thing. And so then we go and I get this ticket. The guy was very nice. So it's Memorial Day. You can't be mean to like an officer on Memorial Day. So I'm like, I'm sure you got friends. So I just took the ticket happily, because as far as I'm concerned, like $350 for the privilege of driving 35 miles an hour over the speed limit, I feel like that was worth it for the trip. I would have paid that in the beginning.
It's going to cost you more than that, though. Your insurance premiums will go up unless you are able to do traffic school.
No, I'm not doing traffic school.
Then your insurance premiums will go up for the next number of years.
How much do they go up to?
Totally depends on your provider, where you live, the kind of car you have. But you could be looking at anywhere, you know, you could be looking at $20 or $30 more per month.
Over one ticket?
Easily.
Whoa.
It could happen. It depends. It all depends.
I'm a very good driver.
I know you are. You're a very, very good driver.
And very fast.
Yes.
I'm both of those things.
You should have gone to Dinosaur National Monument while you were driving.
I did.
Did you get to scrape it for bones?
No, I just pulled in and we peed in the visitor center.
Oh, okay. The real pity is if you would have...
As far as I'm concerned, I saw everything they had to offer there.
All right. Well, I'm glad you had an exciting time.
Yeah. What did you do?
I'm looking forward to next week when you come out here and we will romp. Romp. What did I do? We had a very chill Memorial Day. We were just hanging out here. What happened? Let's see. I discovered the joy of seeing movies before noon changes your life.
Was it all old people? Because that's every time I've seen a movie before noon.
Let me tell you. I haven't seen this happen for years. I used to see the good deals before noon, but if you go DC, movies here are like $12 normally if you go at nighttime.
Oh,
it's $7 awful. If you go before noon. $7! I got to enjoy Iron Man 3 with my wife for a mere $14.
If I may, game changer.
It was a game changer. I want to see every movie now on a Saturday before noon.
I used
to be a purist. I'd always want to go to midnight shows and really be with the crowds, but now I don't see the point. Just I'll pop some popcorn at home and show up before noon and just have a grand time.
Oh, my gosh. You pop your own popcorn.
Sometimes. Well, why would you want to spend $7 on popcorn when you can pop it yourself and put it in a bag and just sneak it in?
Jeff, I don't know that that's right.
It is right.
Is that okay to do?
Yeah, I don't think there's an ethical gray area when it comes to bringing one's own food into a movie theater because of the managed economy of things like movie theaters.
Is it like an ethical black area?
I don't even think it's a black area. It's a white area, I would say.
Really?
Because they don't allow it.
I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
Oh, jeez. Oh, that's intense.
Yeah, so that happened. We had a very pleasant show Memorial Day. I was getting there. We went to the National Arboretum in D.C., which I expected to be an arboretum, and my wife expected to be some sort of manicured, like, Parisian garden or something along those lines, is my understanding. It's more like a wild mess with the occasional... something. So it's nice. They have the old columns from the Capitol building there that just stand up in the middle of a field. So
what was the purpose? You just went to look at the field?
I'd never been to the Arboretum. I mean, the point of the Arboretum is they almost try to create individual biomes, if you will, where they, you know, display different tree, different foliage, fauna and stuff from, sorry, not fauna, flora from various areas grouped together, what have you. So in one of these areas in a big meadow, they have these old Capitol columns. They have a lot of other stuff in displays. They had a whole bonsai exhibit. It was delightful. We went there because we'd never been there. So we just went to go check it out. It was a fine way to...
Wow.
Yeah, it was a wonderful, great, uproarious time. And you'll make fun of me for this too, like you make fun of me for everything.
But, whoa.
But on Sunday, we taught our kids about the coming forth of the Golden Plates and the Book of Mormon by making them take part in a play.
What did they do?
Well, rather than read a lesson to them, because it's a very dense lesson, it's just a lot of reading a story, and four-year-olds don't have great attention spans. They get really, really tired if the lesson's longer than, like, a minute, or the story's longer than a minute. So instead, we had them act out the parts. So I had a kid. We covered the windows with blankets and had one of the kids wear a white bathrobe to be the angel Moroni, and we stood him up on a chair.
Brilliant.
And we had one of the other kids sleeping like Joseph Smith, and then we shined a flashlight on him, and I whispered in his ear, and he did the whole Moroni thing three times. We didn't just say he showed up three times. He just kept saying, "I am Moroni! La, 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 la."
That's awesome.
And it was fun, and they're these timid four-year-olds, so they just sit there like, "I am Moroni. I was sent here with a mission. Okay. Great." But it was fun. It was fun. I hope they remember it. That's my biggest concern.
They're four, so of course they won't remember anything.
I've been surprised what they have remembered in the time we've taught them. But yeah.
But when I was a kid, I walked like the missionaries in California. They had a district meeting one morning, like before they went on a hike or something that we drove them to, and they had that in our house. And I still remember vividly, like they were just goofing around and reenacted the. Like where in the Book of Mormon, where Moroni's army is there, and I believe it's who is it? Amalekai gets scalped. Is that
yes?
Am I thinking of the right guy?
Yes. So you reenact like the scalping?
Well, they did. Like they were just like they just for their spiritual thought, they did a they just suggested a story, and then they all got together and acted it out. So there's like six of them. And they were swiping and like rolling, and I remember watching this. I was like, man, the church is the coolest thing that I have ever seen. and like loved it, fell in love with that story, and like got me reading the scriptures. I was like 9, but it was a great way to get, like, I think that's a brilliant way to engage kids in like the story and help them understand what was happening, because they're actually, I mean, that's the only, they don't have reading comprehension at 4 years
exactly.
old.
They understand. Smart Jeff. Don't thank me. Thank the missus. I'm very. You know how I am. I suck. And so I would naturally just read to them. The genius of my better half just says, we should make them act this out. And at first, I'll think, I don't know. But then I become a believer.
Oh, it's so, your wife, what a sweetheart.
I'm saying a lot of nice things. Well, she's in the room right now while we're recording. If she would run errands right now or something like that, I would take all the credit in the world. That's okay.
Jeff, why are you so mean to your wife? That's what we want to know.
I can't help it.
Anyway, how about that Mormon news?
Do we have to talk about that? I guess we could.
We've been doing Mormon things every now and then.
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, for so many weeks at thisweekinmormons.com. Well, I'm going to let you lead off. Go ahead, Al. Do what you want.
Okay, so Kevin Barney, who we hate. If I may lead with this story.
Yes, tell me about the coward. Yes.
Let me lead in by explaining. We're talking about a man with no spine. But Kevin Barney apparently has a daughter. And so he writes this article for By Common Consent publication, which Jeff and I enjoy from time to time. He writes this article for them that says, or that's titled, To Date Within or Without the Church. And he talks about, I'm guessing his daughter, and I don't mean any offense here, but I'm guessing his daughter is not good looking, just from what I know about Kevin Barney.
And what do you know about Kevin Barney?
Well, I just saw a picture of him one time.
Dude, did you?
And that's it. And he's old, and he's not the one that's dating. This is all hypotheticals. And so we're going to use this not to focus on Kevin. We've had enough of that. But to focus on the message.
I just messaged you a beautiful picture of Kevin Barney.
Wait, is this the one that we did?
Well, sort of.
Yeah. Didn't we make him and Peggy Fletcher Stack have a baby?
I think we did make him. Yeah, you sat there on the air the whole time trying to put it together, and I kept trying to end the show. And you kept saying, no,
exciting.
No, one more minute. And that went on for about 12 minutes.
Sorry about that.
It's okay.
So anyway, so he's talking about his daughter's no longer very active in the church, and so dating without religion is not a thing for her, and she's dating, and he was really proud of her. And he got thinking about himself, about how what would it be like if he were to date, like if he had to date again, would he date inside or outside the church, and what would be the reasoning behind that? And he actually mentioned a couple of things that were interesting. So we're going to take a minute to talk about it. Over the course of this weekend road trip I was on, I had a girlfriend fly out and road trip with me, and it was very entertaining. But she and I were talking about a similar thing, you know, about dating and like, you know, do you date within or without the church? And we've talked about it on the show a couple of times recently. And for her, she said, you know, it'd just be really, really hard at this point in my life to walk away from somebody that treated me well and did all that, you know, to walk away and say, well, you don't go to church enough, because guys that do go to church, I mean, the bar is an elusive bar, because guys that go to church and do their home teaching, there's no promise that they're actually going to be good guys, right? I mean, you can't put all your focus on those couple of check boxes.
Sure, yeah.
But the one thing that Kevin Barney mentioned that was interesting to me that I thought was relevant was he said that in the church, as we date, we have so many reasons to kind of say no, right? Like, you know, there's word of wisdom problems, or if you swear, if you watch a rated R movie, or if you, you know, whatever it is that you're doing on all these other things, they limit your choices by so much that if you were outside the church, you're just looking for a guy that's nice, that has a decent job, that treats you all right, right? And everything else just kind of takes care of itself, and you're like, oh, you do this, oh my gosh, you do this. And like all that just kind of levels out. And that actually kind of resonated with me. I realized that in the church we do that quite often, where, you know, we'll look at somebody and like, I remember growing up, Jeff, we've talked about this, but like caffeine was even a deal breaker for me. I would be like, oh man, you drank a Coke, I'm out of here. Which obviously I've matured since then, but like in the church, we have so much criteria And there's so many levels of dedication within the church to the gospel, right? You can be really religious or not very
religious. And a fair point that Kevin Barney actually makes is on the male side of things, it is a lot different for us because typically a good, has his act together, righteous, you know, priesthood bearer has, you know, let's face it, has a lot more choice in the matter as far as what he can and cannot achieve. We tend to find that the real debate whether to date within or without the church often applies more to women. I think it could apply to men as well. But I definitely think that just given the demographics of the church, women do outnumber men. You know, as men, we've tended to have a little bit more of an easier time just simply choosing women that we want to date.
And where is this easier time? I don't understand.
That is because of your own personal problems. I qualify this by saying a good priesthood-bearing righteous man. So...
My crazy Asian porn fetish will not hold up.
Canadian. So,
my Canadian porn fetish.
That was that's an old Jack Donaghy reference from 30 Rock. Anyway.
I need to finish that.
You should finish that, but I think there are good points here. And obviously, not being a single woman, I can't fully understand it. I've met many women who will still staunchly say, you know, absolutely, like, no, Mormon guy doesn't matter. I do think it's good when I see some people at least loosen up a bit in terms of, you know, a lot of women used to say, I want to return missionary and nothing less. Because I think when we're younger, we idealize return missionaries as if they are perfect when they come home. Because a mission, it is, it's a refiner's fire.
And I wonder.
And in the right, with the right attitude, a mission does turn you into a better person and makes you stronger. But that's not to say that someone comes home from a mission and they are therefore impervious to weakness, sin, or right. falling away. And I think as we get older, we hopefully come to learn that, hey, a good person is a good person regardless of what they have or have not done in their life.
So would it be healthy, do you think, to remove ourselves from maybe the checklist mentality of, I want to marry a righteous priesthood holder who does X, Y, and Z, and rather, I don't know, maybe make the checklist a little bit more ambiguous in a way that we can say, you know, I'm looking at the person and not at the criteria. I mean, maybe you could be a good person and still be a crummy home teacher.
That's true.
Maybe not.
And that's something, and I think the one thing to remember is, you know, we work on stuff together. We get married and nobody's perfect. I think we get married and it's very easy to assume the other person's perfect. But, you know, we're not. And we have to... We always have to work on stuff.
But I think of like the friends that I talk to that are in miserable marriages right now.
Right.
Right. Like they hate their husbands. And they, I mean, without fail, all of them were, I mean, the husbands were like good, solid dudes
sure.
doing their thing. And like all the checklists were there, right? Institute every week. And then they come out with some crazy, you know, porn fetish addiction for Canadians or you know, they'll have some weird like bipolar. They snap and go crazy, but guys, I mean, we're really good at doing the checklist. Tell us outward things that we need to take care of. I mean, most guys can take care of it, but then like it's the inward, what you do behind closed doors type of stuff that gets overlooked because you give them a free pass when they do, you know, these four things, and you're like, oh, you must be a great guy,
right?
And I think that's dangerous. It's a dangerous mentality, which maybe by being more focused on like the quality of the person and whether or not, you know, they're of a sound mind and they have a good relationship with God and all that is there and that they're working on all the other things that if we focused more on that, maybe we'd find more quality candidates. I don't know.
No, I think so as well. I don't think there's anything wrong with having a absolute must-have list, but I think it's important that we are smart in what the must-haves are. I think, like you said, someone who's a good person, you know, we want someone who's righteous, who's a good person, who's working towards good things, who strives for a good relationship with God, obviously. But, you know, but not everybody is perfect. I don't think it's wrong by any stretch of the imagination, especially for a woman to bluntly ask a guy she's dating if he struggles with pornography or not. But then after that, I think it's up to those people to decide what they do with that. You know, I think there are some women who would walk away and say, well, sorry, this isn't worth it to me. And there's some who might say, if the guy has the attitude of this is something I struggle with and I'm trying to get over it, and they might want to work together on it. But I think that's totally up to those individuals about what's best for them. You know, absolutely.
It's, man, it's like, and I can't say this enough, I feel so bad for the situation that women are put in dating in today's age. I feel like there's so much that they have to deal with and that they have to be comfortable with. It would. I mean, it was a great day back in the day when you'd be like, "Oh, you look at porn, I'm out of here." Of course, we're getting a divorce. You're awful. You're an awful person, right? And then it shifts though, where like, I don't know of. I mean, even the homeschool kid in Kaysville, Utah, is going to have had an interaction with porn at some point in his life. I mean, on my mission, I was seeing porn on the back of newspapers and stuff. And like, whether or not, I mean, it's not an addiction, but it's like you've seen this stuff, right? Like, right. You've seen it whether you want to or not, and it's there. And so, like, the fact that they have that to compete with in their body image issues and like how they feel about themselves, and on it goes. And then you know, like, knowing that every guy has seen this stuff. You know, it's always there's always something that remembers it, right? Like, you never completely forget the stuff that you don't want to see. It's still there. And I mean, maybe as you draw closer to the Lord and the Spirit will purify you, and like that stuff is removed. But like, as I mean, horny 20-year-olds, no, we still remember it. It's still there. Sure. And so, like, the fact that girls have to be, I mean, you're like, all right, well, let's work on this together, and like, those conversations have to happen. I just feel, I wish that women had the luxury of just still being able to say, only the purest, only the right.
Well, there we go. Let us know your thoughts, folks.
I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, now that I've got my Kevin Barney tirade out.
All right. Kevin Barney is done. It's over. Moving along. Great profile here in New York Times Magazine this past week. All about BYU's digital animation program, which is only dates back to, I think, what, 2000, 2002? 2000 was the year it started. Really interesting way. It sort of profiles the church and BYU at large through the lens of this digital animation program. And you're talking kids who might work for special effects teams or more ones who go along and make, you know, Pixar, DreamWorks type stuff, just digital animation.
There's
a lot to cover here. It's a long article, but it's really, really good. And I feel that it accurately represents what happens at BYU, the church's values, what these kids are striving for, and how different they are from others in their industry. I mean, the fact that they strive as a whole to always make stuff that has a good message, that is uplifting in one way or another. And again, that's individual. Some of them could openly say, one of them I think is even quoted saying that they can't watch Shrek because they think it's just too vulgar for them, because it's just all fart jokes and stuff like, and burps and stuff like that. And for them, for what they're trying to convey as an artist, they think that's pointless and offensive to them, and that's fine. But it's great because you see how they struggle, how they work collaboratively to get things done, how they strive to represent what BYU represents, and how you could easily see that being at odds with the fine, exciting world of Hollywood and of studios and of struggling, starving artists and of all that stuff. You know, definitely you wouldn't assume that major studios would be going to Provo to recruit kids to be in their programs. Because if I were some quote-unquote worldly folk running some movie, first place to go to find talent, I would not think, would be Provo, Utah. No. But this program is only, you know, what, 13 years old now, and it's really built itself up quite a bit. And I loved reading it, and it really makes you proud for the thing these students are trying to accomplish, for what it represents. And it's interesting how much the industry now actually favors the program at BYU compared to others. You hear totally non-Mormon industry people saying, like, no, we love it.
Like, how do they favor it above others?
Sorry, what was that?
Like, how is it that they favor that over others?
Well, I think they love them so much because, well, one, they don't come with this sort of tainted image. They're wholesome people who can offer something valuable to the movies they're trying to do. You can imagine a lot of people want to go to Pixar because I think Pixar lends itself, you know, the most to the BYU way of doing things. One of the other points, and I was sharing this with you earlier, Al, was that they work collaboratively at BYU. It's not a bunch of people working individually on their films alone, because the way their schedules are and the required curriculum load at BYU and other things, they have to work as teams to get these different movies done that they want to work on. And so because of that, they are better acclimated to working as a group and getting stuff done. And when you enter the industry, like any other job, you're not running the show. You're not going to come in with your great idea and everyone's going to listen to you. You're doing grunt work. You're working as a team and you're trying to make stuff
happen. You're a cog in the wheel.
Exactly. You're a cog in the wheel, but they understand what it means to be a cog in the wheel. So professionals outside of Provo said it's great because they come in and they kind of know their place. They have ambition. They're good folks, but they like get the job done and they work as a team. And that's very valuable. And I think as Mormonism in general, I think if we do it right, it teaches us a lot about the value of working collaboratively and being, you know, a good cog in the wheel and understanding that together we can accomplish great things, and that it's not always about the individual and the individual vision. You know, I think Mormonism in general really has so much to offer about that in general. So I just recommend reading the article.
That is cool. I mean, it's like BYU is known for a couple of things, right? The accounting program.
Right. Business.
Well, their business people are lame. The and now the animation. I feel like, I mean, it's just great to have, the more that we become known for, like, just being good people, like being successful at what we do. I mean, it forces people to take a look at, or another look at our religion, because you can't just be dismissive and say all those people are crazy when, you know, the best people that you know are all LDS, right? And like the more that we can do, the more best people we can be. I feel like the better chance we have of coming out of obscurity to the point of like people liking us, wanting to know more about the gospel of Jesus Christ.
And I think it's also worthwhile, not that one discipline is better than the other, but I feel like anything involved in the, you know, in the arts, things that would tend to skew to the more, there's no other way to say it, but the more liberal, not as churchy perhaps segment of society, I think it's really great when we're able to make inroads there. Especially because, you know, I mean, we can put out a bunch of dentists and scientists and people don't think much of it. But when we're able to penetrate Hollywood with great graduates of a university who represent the values, I think it's all the stronger.
So true. Okay, so there's another. We got to give some props to Peggy Fletcher Stack today. Normally, Peggy Fletcher Stack and Kevin Barney have redeemed themselves on today's show. Peggy Fletcher Stack noticed something going on over at DI where workers. Hours were being cut by the organization because of the Obamacare happening. So one of the facets of Obamacare that says any company that has over 50 employees has to provide a healthcare option for their employees, and yada, 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 right? So you have to have 50 full-time employees.
50 employees working more than 30 hours a week is what qualifies.
So what they've done is they've looked at this and realized that they can't afford to pay the health insurance option for them. And so they've started cutting all the hours of these immigrant workers down to 30 hours a week. I'm guessing 29.9.
Exactly.
When I was in college at BYU Hawaii, in order for, like by state regulation, they had to provide health insurance for any employee that worked more than 20 hours a week. And so we were only ever allowed 19 hours.
Yeah, I saw that in Provo. Same thing.
And so, you know, this isn't something new. This is a business tactic. And I own a business myself. And this is something that we're very conscious of. Because, you know, it's fine. Like, it's fine as if you have, like, I don't know, higher paid workers, right? But if your workers are making like $2,500 a month, your Obamacare option is, or not Obamacare, but like a healthcare option.
Affordable Care Act.
Yeah. You're not going to find anything for less than maybe $1,500 a month, right? So your cost for that employee goes from $25 to almost $5,000, where in reality, you could have hired another person for that wage.
I don't think it would cost that much. I mean, you could have a family for $1,500, but for one person, it could be...
Jeff, these are actual numbers that I'm quoting you. Mine were $2,000 a month because we had to include a like HR role in order to provide these. And so it would have gone from $2,500 to $4,500 a month. So, like, these aren't ambiguous numbers. It's not like, it's going to cost you a lot. Like, for me to go get personal insurance, it's much cheaper than for a company to have to provide it.
Right.
Because of, you know, the option that one person gets sick on your plan and all of the premiums are supposed to rise. I mean, everything changes. It's a big mess, right? And so, here DI is preemptively cutting it. What's happening, though, is people are looking at this and saying, you're a huge company. You employ a ton of people. You know, these are migrant people, like, that don't have a lot of options, and you're taking money away from them. And they're leading under the guise of, well, now we can hire more people because we have hours to fill, so more people get the opportunity. So maybe a good
That's
thing
so
there,
weird.
But like it would be super hard for me as the worker getting my hours cut. I would feel pretty ticked off.
Well, of course, what we can assume from this, though, I'm going to take this to mean that the church has not been providing insurance anyway. So it's not like this is going to be
right
a big...
Now.
It's going to be fewer hours, for any employees, of course. But like it says, they start at $7.25 an hour, and they can work their way up very quickly depending on how
well. But I mean, it's $7.25 an hour, right? Like the difference is like $180 a month, or probably even a little bit more than that, maybe $250 a month. Which is, at that point, I mean, it's like the difference of $2,000 and $1,700, right? Like that's all of a sudden I can't afford to buy gas to get to work anymore. I mean, this is a big chunk of a paycheck that's going away by taking 10 hours a month,
yep,
or 10 hours a week away.
I know. So, you know, it's definitely something. So it's, yeah, it's hard to say.
It's definitely something.
Well,
Thank you, Jeff.
It's a funny, it's tough. I get it because the church is striving to save money, and they haven't been providing health insurance before.
Are you mad at the church, or are you mad at Obama right now?
I don't know.
Which way are you leaning?
At the system in general. I hate our entire healthcare system. Nothing about Obamacare is going to make it that much better. I hate the whole thing. It's all terrible. We have the most warped in America. We have international listeners, and I would love for them to chime in and tell us about their systems. Because in the U.S., we have the most jacked up, convoluted healthcare system I think the world has ever seen. Because it's not totally privatized. It's not totally public. It's all weird. I guess my main thing is, who decided that for some reason your employer should be responsible for providing you with healthcare, and the quality of your job should denote the quality of healthcare you receive?
No, it's supposed to be a benefit, right? It's like hiring a chef.
I know. That's why I've always thought it's so weird to me. I've always felt like, so wait a minute. Like, why? I feel like healthcare should be completely separated from being a benefit. It shouldn't be a benefit from employers. I feel it should be something totally separate from that. Because I don't get why your employer should have anything to do with the quality of healthcare you get, or none whatsoever. I think it's so strange when you really think about it. It's just odd. So,
it is odd.
So I don't know, but interesting move by the church to do this. Absolutely.
Well, it's from a business owner's standpoint, it's really smart, right? Like I'm looking at doing a similar thing with employees, where we'll move who's employed where and hiring different people in different organizations and blah blah blah, for the same purpose, because we can't afford to have over 50. And so instead of just being able to focus on running my business, dang it, we have to do all this
now,
goofy stuff.
Now, as a business owner, would you favor, because you have to do all this, would you favor if it were in some way a single payer system or something like that, would you favor just having to pay out higher taxes? Well, because then it would just be higher taxes on the individuals and it wouldn't affect you, right? I mean, if it came out of people's just federal taxes to pay for a system like that, you wouldn't really pay any of that, because you'd just be paying whatever you pay as far as their wages.
Right.
And then it would just
right.
be taken out of them. So as an employer, do you feel that a system like that would in some ways make more sense in providing people with health care and in not hurting you as someone who's trying to provide jobs to others? Even if it meant they would get less money per paycheck to your staff.
Well, I mean, that's essentially what it is anyway, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if I provide a healthcare plan, you still are paying out of your check for a portion of that. And so if, I mean, like we're kind of leaving the Mormon vein and going into a different,
we are,
different vein, but I pay for my own healthcare, right? I go to my healthcare provider and I signed up as an individual, and it cost me, you know, a couple hundred a month, but I didn't always. I mean, there was a time I broke my arm and did not have health insurance.
I know, we raised money.
And I was motivated. I was motivated, by the way, thank you, Barbara, for that donation. And we were motivated to, like, I was motivated to go and get this and take care of it. And I had more money without healthcare, but then I needed healthcare, so I spent the money I needed to get it.
No, and I went through the same thing. I went through almost, you know, over 2 years without health insurance, and thank heavens nothing bad happened to me, because I don't know what I would have done. And that's scary when you think about it. But
like, I mean, there's nothing in me that's like, who's going to give this to me? You go and figure it out. It's part of being a grown-up.
But do you feel that you should have to go and seek this and pay for it? Or do you feel that it's a privilege, or do you feel that it is a right for you to have health care?
I don't expect the government to provide health care free of charge. I don't.
There we go. I don't have all the answers for how to do it, but I do feel like health care should be like a human right thing, not like a perk.
Well, and, I mean, much
and I don't know what
to,
the best way is to
achieve Copenhagen, it. Right? Copenhagen doesn't mind paying 60% in taxes because they free education, free healthcare, free all.
Americans, if any of you listening, you're worried about socialism coming to our country because of the past few years, go to Denmark.
Oh, you'll love it.
No, you will not. You will realize that we are so many light years away from ever achieving the welfare state in this country that you can rest at ease. And
how great would that
not
be?
Because I've never seen anything like that in my life. I mean, living in the UK was one thing, but Scandinavia, I mean, America's nowhere even close to that level of stuff, and we never will be. It's just a whole different. And they complain about it, though, too. I mean, cars are marked up 240%.
Well, they're marked up, but you don't meet anybody there that's like, I wish I wasn't here. They're all like, no, you know what? We know we got it good. We pay for it, but we got it pretty damn
good.
More
or less, but you do see some stuff like that. I mean, how they dissuade you to have cars. We're Americans. I'm from the West. I like the freedom to have a car and just go where I want.
Amen.
I hate the toll roads here in the East Coast. They're the worst.
Anyway,
so most of you are probably familiar with the 3-year-old project the church has been going on for a while now to make all those Bible videos. If you go to BibleVideos.LDS.org, which is not one, common narrative streaming from one thing to another. It's a bunch of separate videos varying in length, all about New Testament stories, most of them dealing with the ministry of Christ, a few more after with the apostles, with Paul and the book of Acts and all those sorts of things. Anyway, they've just finished production. It's wrapping up. After all this time, last Friday was the last day they shot anything there at the Goshen Jerusalem set. So,
and we never made it down there to be in.
You've been
show.
There. You really should call them up, because I bet they would make it open for a walkthrough or a tour or something, especially now that they don't need it to film anything. And I think it would be really cool to see. And it's huge.
Let's go.
I would love to go there. We can go in August. The funny thing is the church mentioned that you probably saw they had that mini-series of the Bible, a few months ago on the History Channel.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, when they were planning on making that, I guess the producers actually approached the church and asked them if they could use the set for filming there. But the church, they kind of, in that little winky, smiley temple worker humor way, said like, yeah, we kind of wanted to make sure we were done with it before we let somebody else touch it. Translated, don't Kirtland Temple this thing. It's ours. So,
don't Kirtland
Temple.
So
we'll see what happens. I mean, they might make more movies, but at the same time, they might very well rent it out to other studios who want to use it for this or for that. I'd love to go check it out. I just think it would be cool. And it's been a huge production for them to do. Overall, I have enjoyed the videos. I think they've been, decent quality.
It's great. And it's a great, the thing that's great about them is that they're non-denominational. You can share them with, anybody that's a Christian appreciates the quality that goes into that, because the story is the story.
They are very New Testament. So cool. 3-year project all wrapped up. Moving.
Also, there's a great great story about, well, not a great story, but so a Mormon woman, mother of 7, and her husband go down for an aunt's funeral in Mexico. They ride a bus. And they go down there and they're riding their bus back to Phoenix to catch a flight home. And they get stopped at the border. The mom has 12 pounds of marijuana under her seat.
Reefer madness, now, everything, Al. Reefer madness.
The crummy thing is, at this stage, you're just like, obviously it's not hers, right? Somebody stashes it there and she takes the fall. She's the fall guy. And they're talking to the authorities, and the authorities say, like, yeah, we know it's not you guys, but we have to go. This is the process. And so you're in jail until whenever. Her trial is today, the 28th. And so she's supposed to, figure out what's going to happen to her. But, like, how crazy would it be? Like, that's like, I mean, one of our moms just getting thrown in a Mexican prison for selling the corn baller in Mexico. Like, how ridiculous is that? You're just like, what can we do at this point? I don't know. Kids home or just,
well, it's
like,
messed up.
Let our mom go.
Well, I know. And like their lawyer said, basically just tried to bribe him and pay him off. And now they haven't done that. And now she runs the risk. If they don't decide to let her go soon, she'll be sent down to an actual prison somewhere in southern Mexico.
Dude, that would be nuts.
That would not be good. Speaking of corn ballers, brief stop. You haven't seen Arrested Development yet, right?
Well, I've watched the first episode and I enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
We haven't quite finished it. I've made my way through about, what are we at, about 4/5 of.
Why are you so, you didn't like the third season as much until you watched it a few times.
I still like the third season, but I feel like even during the third season is when it starts to drift a little bit into self-parody. As opposed to how, like, the first and second season would call back to some other jokes, but they were still developing a lot of new stuff. The third season, it seemed like, started calling back too much on the same old gags. And so far, I've enjoyed it, the new Arrested Development, but I haven't laughed a lot. I mean, that first episode with Michael, warning, folks, brief spoilers right now, so turn away for a minute if you don't want to hear anything. But you watched it, and it was just sad. I mean, the gag with Michael getting voted off away from the dorm room lasted for like 10 minutes. It never ended.
That was brilliant. Just move on. Wasn't that so clever?
It wasn't so clever. So far, don't know how I feel. Okay, folks, you can tune back in.
We're back.
Welcome back.
Made it.
Speaking of other things in media, brief mention here. There's a new movie being released in cinemas that's going to be called Ephraim's Rescue. And it is going to be the wonderful true story about a guy named Ephraim. Ephraim Hanks, who went and saved a lot of people when the Willie and Martin handcart companies were stranded. This is a theatrical
release. I think this
release.
Is my my mission buddy, Tanner Christensen, maybe his dad or him. I know he was doing some editing.
Really? So see, that's cool. So I guess the same guy who made it, they put out a movie called 17 Miracles, which I never saw. But
I heard it was really good, though. I heard that one was good, too. I haven't seen it either.
It gets the wife support
as well. I need to go to
Deseret
Book more.
Never saw that. So this is a new movie. It's cool because it's not just straight to video. This is not Hailstorm Entertainment, folks. Okay, this is legit. This is God's Army caliber. This is Saints and Soldiers. We're not messing around here. So it's going to be playing in theaters around the Wasatch Front. Go and see the riveting true story of Ephraim Hanks saving people.
Ephraim.
I admit I would probably go see this if I lived in Utah.
Yeah, we all will.
I'm a sucker for uplifting Mormon cinema.
Let's see. The church has an official response to the Boy Scouts of America. Has officially said that now gays can your sexual orientation is not a factor in whether or not you're allowed to join their program. And the church, it was interesting. So they said church leaders will continue to seek the most effective ways to address the diverse needs of young people in the United States and throughout the world. But as they move forward, they'll move forward in association with the Boy Scouts of America. One of the other things they said was the policy applies to church-sponsored units that young men who abide by church standards are welcome warmly and encouraged to participate. So sexual orientation has not previously been and is not now a disqualifying factor for boys who want to join Latter-day Saint Scout troops. I thought that was interesting that they pointed out that like this has never been something that the church has stated was a criteria to be a part of.
Which is interesting, though. But I mean, Boy Scouts, gays were banned under Boy Scout rules. Does that mean the church had its own sort of set of rules for troops?
Well, no. I think that the church let the Boy Scouts take the fall on that like, yeah, we never said anything about this. But there's groups that are organizing that are like against this. There's church within the church. There's groups that are trying to protest it.
Of course.
I mean, a lot of that going on. I see it as probably this is the best thing that the church could do is just say, yeah, you know, we're with it. But I would not be surprised still if the church broke away from the Boy Scouts of America at some point in the future, just like we've talked about, and started doing something more duty to God related. But their final paragraph, the church appreciates the BSA's reaffirmation of its commitment to duty of God, which includes service to others and moral behavior, central principles of our teaching to young men. So
do you think they were all in a meeting and Boyd K. Packer stood up and said, look at me. Look what the homosexuals have done to me.
I could light myself on fire. No, I don't think he did that.
By the way, speaking of the, we can segue right into what Al has posted on our little organizational feed as gays. Al, you might remember the fine guy named Josh Weed. When did we talk about this? It's been probably, a year and a half or so at least?
He was the guy that married, he was gay, but came out to his fiance, the girl he was dating.
Yeah, well before they even dated.
And still got married to her. So he's a happily married gay man that's married to a woman. That's it, right?
Yeah, well, there's a show called I'm Married to...
Yeah, on VH1. I mean, this would be a sketchy show to go on. Even their screen grabs are like, yeah, I wouldn't have trusted them with that. But it's interesting. There's a clip from the show where it shows him talking to, a gay couple that says... The gay couple says, you're not gay enough. You're not invited to identify with our group, right? You're married to a woman. you can't be a part of our group. And he's like, what do you mean I can't be a part? Aren't we all about accepting over here? Like, this is my orientation. This is what I am. And they're like, yeah, but you're married to a woman, so you don't get to be gay. And like, it's just a really interesting conversation between them that I was like, I wouldn't have thought about that. You know, with all the stuff that he went through to write that post, that op-ed, and the publicity he got and stuff, the last thing I would have thought was that the gays would be like, no, we're not that. We can't be expected to do what you do. And it's just really kind of a bizarre part of that story that I hadn't considered.
I know. Don't you kind of love the irony, though, in statements like that?
Yeah.
Love everyone, yeah, except for the one who is gay but doing something different. It is funny. I love Josh Weed. I think it's a fascinating story, and that works for them, even though I imagine they are very much the minority of Mormon couples who can make that work. But good for them.
That's it, you know. Anyway, Jeff, it's been great.
Thanks.
Thank you for being a part of my life, for worrying about my women.
I love your women.
I love your women.
Don't look at me like that, wife. She's giving me
dirty. All right, man. Well, have a great week, Jeff. Hey, I come to see you next week.
Sorry.
Jeff, I will come to see you. We are doing our road trip to Cedar Point.
Yeah, we're going to go to scenic, gorgeous Ohio.
It's going to be brown.
There are some triple D places, I think, in both Pittsburgh or Cleveland. So
I'll take them all.
We'll have to check them out and see what's what. Anyways, folks, I'm just going to say, find us on Facebook, look for us on Twitter, shoot us an email, contact at thisweekinmormons.com.
Leave us a comment, thisweekinmormons.com. We love it.
We love all those things, and find us on iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher Radio, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
All right, man. Take it easy, Jeff.
Thank you, Al, and we appreciate you listening, everybody. Can't do it without you. Hope you'll spread the word, and we'll know if you have, because we'll be looking at our download numbers every week, like I always do. Anyways, hope you all have a good week. This is This Week in Mormons. We'll see you later, bye.